Hello and welcome to another Charity Digital podcast. Today we're talking about climate action in the charity sector from the perspective of environmental charities. But first, we're going to take a moment to reintroduce ourselves to our listeners. Do you know about everything we do at Charity Digital? At Charity Digital, we drive the charity sector forward with digital tools and resources. We provide charities with free and discounted tech donated by the world's leading companies. We host skill building, online and in-person interactive events, workshops, webinars and focus groups. Besides our podcast, we also produce free articles and videos to support the sector. To find out more about how we can help your charity, explore our website at charitydigital.org.uk/welcome. Our 2023 climate action campaign may be coming to an end in December, but that doesn't mean we should stop acting on climate change. Indeed, climate change won't stop acting on us. Our survey, Climate Change in the UK Charity Sector, found that more than 4 in 5 charities are now concerned about the impacts of climate change, but the majority rate the sector at 6 out of 10 in how well they are enacting sustainability in their organisations. Clearly, there is still work to be done. Our report showed that the sector lacked clear communication on sustainability among their peers. And while many charities praised the work of environmental organisations, they were unsure about what they could do to tackle climate change themselves. The responsibility for tackling climate change in the sector, of course, does not rest only with environmental charities, but they perhaps understand the challenges more than most. So having discussed the current state of climate action with guests from across the sector in our previous podcast, today we speak to guests from environmental charities to get their say. What role does digital technology play in climate action and sustainability? What is the current state of affairs and where do we have left to go? In this podcast, I am joined by Lauren Wiseman, Environmental Manager at WWF UK, Rachel Hall, Climate Change Manager at the Wildlife Trusts, and Emma Marsh, Director for Digital Technology and Communications at the RSPB. Thank you all for joining me today. So let's get into it. How has digital technology supported your work in tackling climate change? I'll go to you first, Lauren, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. So at WWF, we are working, like, climate change is one of our key goals, one of our key areas that we work on. But at WWF, we have a phrase, which is walking the talk. And we are all about making sure that we are practicing what we're preaching. So we can't go out and advocate for all these great initiatives and ideas and pressure governments and businesses if we're not getting our own house in order. So my role as environmental manager is to make sure that our environmental impacts are minimized, and I control sort of all of our emissions reporting and our footprints and all of that. So digital technology is really helpful to helping us achieve those core targets to reduce those environmental impacts. So at a very, very basic level, you've got print, for example. So internal printing, we need to be able to monitor and manage that. So track what people are printing, how much they're printing, where we can help them by identifying high print users to help put in place tools and software that can help reduce that demand. So digital proofing tools, document signing is a big one. It's pointless to print off a 40-page legal contract just to print that signature page when you could easily use something like Adobe DocuSign. Perfectly legally valid, but reduces that print demand significantly because those are some of the biggest print jobs in history that we used to print. It also helps us help our supporters. So we can have platforms like a portal where our supporters can log in. So that reduces the amount of printing that we're sending out in our donor packs. So lots of our supporters still want those physical copies, but where we can, we'll help facilitate a digital portal so that people can have access to all sorts of pictures and articles and the key insights into the work that we do by having a digital option, and that reduces the print that we're sending out. So print is a big one, but there's also things like document storage. So using the cloud as much as possible, keeping all of our documents in one place instead of having them scattered in various different drawers around the building, different buildings, or different external storage places as well. So it helps the organization run more efficiently and smoothly by having it all in one place that you can instantly search. And instead of having to troll through all those physical documents, you can just search for a key term and find the document that you need. But also behavior change. So We're very lucky in that we have fantastic headquarters, which I'm sure all of you have heard of, called the Living Planet Center. It's my favorite building, so I always big it up. It's a BREEAM outstanding building. And as part of achieving that BREEAM rating system and being one of the most sustainable buildings in the world, we have a building management system. So that operates across the entire building, and it can assess the outside temperature and outside weather conditions against what the temperature is inside. And it can do things like look at the light levels outside and automatically close and open blinds to make sure that the light levels inside are reducing our energy demand. So it can dim the lights, it can open and close the blinds, it can open and close the windows. But it also helps me as environmental manager by being able to track the amount of energy being used in different rooms and zones of the building. So maybe it's a room constantly uses a very high amount of energy. So maybe we need to change the technology that's being used in that room, like the screens, maybe they're energy inefficient. And at this point, we could change those, or, as is quite often the case, it might be behavior change that needs addressing. So maybe people keep leaving those lights on. So even though they're on inactivity timers, we could still be saving that energy by addressing behavior change and reinforcing those ideas to staff. So being able to track that and monitor it across the building really helps with that staff engagement, helping them understand how much energy they're using. So we can look at how much a printer uses and add that up into how many donations equivalent that is, and try and engage staff with their behavior. It helps us reduce our impacts in the long term as well.
That's so interesting. That's something that Charity Digital are really trying to get to grips with ourselves at the moment. We've got a green team. We're trying to change behaviours and think about different ways that we can minimise it. That's really, really helpful. I'm sure lots of our listeners will find it too. Thank you. What about you, Emma? How has digital supported your climate actions?
Thank you, Laura. So we work across conservation on the ground, across thousands of hectares, from peat bogs to ancient woodlands to coasts and estuaries. We protect species. We're doing groundbreaking science, policy and advocacy, campaigning, community engagement, all of that focused on saving nature. And that takes an awful lot of digital technology to keep the lights on, to keep us safe, and to help us deliver our climate goals. So both internally as to how we run the organisation and the delivery we do on the ground. And our aim is really to place technology and data at the forefront of how we're delivering our mission. In effect, to give us the toolkit we need to tackle the nature and climate emergency at the pace and scale that's needed. So in terms of our own internal organisational climate goals, we're working on a project to explore moving our membership magazine, which goes to over 1.2 million members, to a digital offer. And one of the main reasons is to reduce its carbon impact. So if half of our members moved over to the digital version, we think we could collectively save over 300 tons of carbon a year. We've also moved to hybrid working since the pandemic, as have many others. So we have a mix of people being home-based, dual office and home-based, and office-based. As a result, we've got much less of a carbon impact from commuting, but it's also resulted in less demand for office space. So a lot of corresponding emission savings coming in there. We've started a project to develop our greenhouse gas reduction plan. And our trajectory looks at steps to take in 2030 and 2045. The majority of our sites have smart meters. We've got a lot of reserves across the UK. And so using smart meters, many of which are half hourly, so are really giving us finer grain data, enabling us to reduce energy significantly. We've embedded environmental criteria in procurement decision-making around, particularly around our digital space. We've also got KPIs for digital technology around our sustainability impact. So that's really driving the robustness of our supply chain. So if I give you one example, we recycle old laptops through Computers for Charity, and they go to people experiencing digital poverty. And last year, we donated 353 laptops, which helped people in need, but it also saved 51 tons of carbon. So when that goes through the whole supply chain for a charity, the savings potential is enormous. And then we've a significant new 18-month project, which we've just started developing an RSPB environmental climate dashboard. So this will link all of our existing data portals, so internal and external, and will allow us to track emissions from our operations, also visualise our land management greenhouse gas reduction and a removal impact in the same format. And ultimately, that means we'll make better decisions as a charity with regards to our impact on the environment and our impact on climate. And therefore, we'll be able to reduce any impact much more quickly, efficiently, and importantly, really track it so that we can show people the changes that we're making. And that inspires people to go further and faster.
That's so interesting. I'm just loving this discussion. I think we're going to learn so much. And yeah, I think it's so exciting, especially as a digital charity, to hear how digital is supporting that. They don't have to be mutually exclusive things. Rachel, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, digital really comes in fundamentally in kind of multiple layers for us in our strategy. So at the foundations, absolutely around getting our own house in order, as Lauren and Emma have said, in terms of just understanding, recording what we already do and the impacts we already have and spotting opportunities to reduce our impact there. But at the same time, we also have a digital root and branch transformation. So thinking about how we can use digital more effectively to deliver our strategic goals to restore nature across the UK. And I think really the key for us here is that as a federation of 47 independent organisations operating across the UK, Isle of Man and Alderney, the transition we've made to digital, particularly over the last few years, accelerated through the pandemic, going to SharePoint online ways of working, being able to connect up after working from home for so long, video conferencing. Those are all fundamental technologies that are really helping us to share and exchange ideas more, to support each other and to facilitate an active community of practice, essentially, across our networks, which is really important to then share some of the simple ideas. So, for example, at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, they were repurposing some of their thermal imaging cameras that they use for their bat surveys, actually, to have a look and do an energy audit of some of their properties. And that was a fascinating example of repurposing their digital kit to look at where there was energy wastage in their buildings. And what they found was unlagged pipes, radiators losing heat on external walls. But actually, really interestingly, was a great example of their landline phones, which they found to be using a huge amount of excess energy when they're on standby. And simply by transitioning over to using Teams instead of their landlines, they were going to be saving not only £150 per phone in energy costs a year, but also 30 kilograms of carbon. So where we were finding that the repurposing and use of these digital technologies to help inform our strategic aims and ability to reduce emissions in a cost-friendly, cost-saving way has been really important to us. And then we can expand out and thinking about the different layers of new digital technologies or how we're repurposing and using things like our spatial data, both publicly accessible data, but also our own data. And then combining those together has been really interesting. So thinking about all of our habitat mapping and bringing that together on one platform alongside some of the external things as well. And some of what we're really keen to see is how we can make use of some of the more earth observation data, LIDAR, bringing that all together to inform our decision making more effectively on climate in the future.
I had no idea about landlines being so, and it, you're right, the fact that it can save money as well in a cost of living crisis. I think this is dual goals, isn't it? Amazing. So that's really great stuff to hear. But I feel like one part of the problem, as I discussed in the intro, is that charities, the charity sector as a whole, is sort of struggling to make those impacts themselves. Where do you think the charity sector is at the moment when talking about climate change? If I go to you first, Emma.
Thanks, Laura. So, you know, we feel like others that as a leading conservation organisation, it's really vital we always practice what we preach and we lead by example. So by continuing to reduce our environmental footprint, empowering others to do the same. So we want to share our knowledge and experience and any tools that we create so that organisations can do more as a whole. And we know that historically, it's perhaps been felt to be less urgent across the environmental charity sector, because people think, well, we're doing it already because we're taking action on the environment for nature. But actually, simply because we work in this space doesn't mean we're taking the action needed. So I think we need to really be taking a lead on this and showcasing what we can do, because clearly as a charity sector, we're not where we need to be. We are in a climate emergency and we need to act as if we are. So using all the tools, especially digital technology, to get us there. So we need to make sure that we're reflecting that it's not a given that a sustainability or environmental or conservation focused charity is peer leading. We have got to step up to the plate. We need to make sure that in terms of our own environmental and greenhouse gas management, we are leading it, and that we role model how important it is to make it a priority. We've made progress, huge progress in recent years, both ourselves and the sector. You know, personally, we've got additional capacity working on our greenhouse gas reduction plan and environmental dashboard. We have a new program board overseeing the impact and holding us to account, which is really important. As an executive board and with our trustees, we have a real specific interest in what we're doing on sustainability in this space and the technology we're using. So it's a regular topic of discussion at a very senior level, making sure that it's seen as a priority across the organisation. So as conservation, environmental charities, as charities as a whole, we need to be seen walking the talk, leading by example, being really generous and sharing what we've all learned and how we're doing things. Because for me, the biggest barrier for us taking action and taking action with urgency is simply complacency.
Yeah, that's definitely something that sort of, I think, came through in our report. Just a lot of, oh, they'll be doing it. It's really interesting to hear that. And what about you, Rachel? Is that your experience? How are you finding, how do you think the charity sector is behaving on climate change?
Yeah, I mean, I'd absolutely echo Emma's sentiment in terms of where we're at. And traditionally, that kind of assumption that as environmental charities, we were getting on with it and had embedded climate action into all of our work. It's something that we've spent a great deal of time on, actually, at the Wildlife Trust over the last few years, really integrating climate across all of our work areas, not just our nature conservation elements, but also thinking about our supply chain procurements, our HR, our work with corporates. All of that elements is really so that everyone's role feels connected to climate action. And you can see that in how we've developed our new strategy to 2030, that climate action sits across all three of our goals in terms of restoring nature, to have people taking meaningful and inclusive action for our climate and nature work, and also that nature is playing a central and valued role in local and global issues. So that's been really key for us, I think. But I do think we do have to take a step back and think, yes, we may have acted with complacency in assuming that we've always been doing the right thing. But when we put it in context, typically as charities, we aren't very big and we're not consuming a lot typically, and we're not producing a lot, we're not manufacturing. And so our emissions are arguably on the small side. At the Wildlife Trust, our emissions are collectively around 24,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide equivalent a year. So that's way less than 1% of the UK's greenhouse gas emissions collectively. So we do have to think, yes, every emission counts and whatever action we do take really does matter. But at the same time, let's put into perspective that we should be taking action as well as using our voice as charities and our trusted voice with our supporters to really hold government to account on going faster and further in the areas that are going to make the greatest impact as well for us. But I would just add one further thing, which is that because we fall into the charity gap a lot of the time in terms of the existing guidelines and standards around sustainability and environmental reporting. Actually, it means it takes quite a lot of resource for us to think about where and what is a credible approach for us to take. And we should be commended for then still doing work on it and figuring out where we want to be. And fundamentally, there is a shift there, and that reporting requirement will come down to us, and we need to be ready for it so that we're absolutely credible, walking the talk and making sure that we can show others how that they can do it in a cost-effective and timely manner as well.
That's such a great point. That doing your homework before it's asked for. I think that's incredible. It's such a positive way of looking at it as well. And as we know, when talking about climate action, fatalism doesn't work. So if we get ahead of things and praise ourselves, and it'll hopefully get further. Lauren, what about you? How do you think the charity sector is responding to climate action?
Yeah, I agree with Emma and Rachel that all the points they've just said about like progress has been slow, and often we're so focused as environmental charities on achieving good advocacy and campaigns and getting action happening externally that sometimes we just sort of forget about the internal workings and making sure that they're following what we're preaching outside. And I'd also like to echo on what Rachel was saying about this sort of almost privileged position that we have as environmental charities. So the public look to us as the voices of what is the right thing to do. So our donors and supporters obviously expect us to do the right thing. They're donating to us because they believe in the cause that we are fighting for. So if that's slowing climate change or stopping deforestation, whatever that might be, they expect us to be using their money wisely, but also to be investing in the right thing to do. And cost is often a very big limiting factor for charities. So sometimes it can be the barrier for a small charity or a medium-sized charity to invest in the right thing to do because it does come at a cost. But it's for us larger charities to invest in those things to drive that price down by creating that demand. We are also there not just for our donors and supporters, but for the general public as well, to make sure that we're giving them the right information, making sure everything is scientifically accurate and showing them what the right path is. And we also do that with other charities and steward their interests too. So smaller charities might look to bigger charities to say, like, well, how are you doing your emissions reduction? What are you using? What are you counting? Should I be doing the same thing as you? So we have that responsibility to make sure that we're sharing the information and details with them to help everyone progress, and being very open and transparent to make sure that we're all improving and achieving this shared goal together.
That takes me quite neatly onto the next question. So where do we think the charity can improve on climate action? Is it, you know, making sure that everything is accurate that we put out? I think charities are already really good at that. But yeah, there's a lot of misinformation around climate change. How can we improve the way we talk to our service users, to our beneficiaries about climate change? And what were the first steps that you think charities should take in tackling climate change? Shall I go to you, Rachel, first?
Yeah, of course. I think there's kind of three main areas for me that I really think about when I think about where we can improve. And there's something for me around that kind of systems thinking approach. So typically as charities, we all spring up from having a single cause that we're focused on, be that environment, nature conservation, social justice, anything. But what we need to remember when we take a step back is that they're all interlinked. Fundamentally, the social nature, climate, environmental health issues, everything's linked. So if we can take a wider approach to that, and that gives us this phenomenal ability across the charity sector to see the value of all working together, because we're all fundamentally addressing humanitarian issues and problems caused by the human race. So where we can see benefits to working together, we're really going to be addressing those not in isolation, which could then lead to maladaptations. For example, in the nature conservation sector, we typically talk about the risk of planting Sitka spruce forests to tackle climate change, mitigate climate change, but fundamentally it's bad for nature. So actually you get this solution that's good for neither cause. So that's really important. I think the other thing for us that's really key is around that ability to showcase examples. As one of the largest landowners in the UK, across all of the nature reserves that we manage, we have this phenomenal ability to showcase what's possible on our reserves and at multiple scales and outside of our bounds too. So thinking about within communities, what's possible in back alleys, working with local community groups, to the big scale, large scale rewilding kind of projects where you can really see a landscape transform. And that leads us into that hopeful messaging. So the climate crisis and the news at the moment is just so doom and gloom about what's going on. We're coming up to COP28 again, and in a key international summit, a key moment for us to take stock of where we're at with climate action. And it's going to be pretty depressing. But at the same time, we all have agency to make a difference with that. We all drive our cars. We're consumers. We consume energy on a daily basis. We have the ability to make change. So as charities, I think we have this trusted voice role to provide hopeful can-do messages and a feeling of agency for our supporters and the public to really kind of stand with us, to feel part of a community taking action for the positive future.
Agree more. Thank you. And that's hopefully why the Climate Action Campaign exists. Emma, what about you?
So I think kind of digital technology allows us as organizations to have much improved data management, which therefore allows us to employ really innovative solutions, which gives us much better knowledge and much greater impact. And we can make sure that means we can concentrate efforts where it's most needed and allowing us to use resources most efficiently and effectively, which then has a knock-on climate impact. And I think we can do that across the whole sector because you know, we need to make sure that it is affordable. I think as a sector, we can influence businesses because businesses have a real obligation in this space. So how can we show using our data management, the technology we're using, how can we show how easy it is? And you know, recently, along with WWF and National Trust, we've had our Saving Our Wild Isles films. And we focused some on businesses, showing the action that's needed because there is no economy without fixing nature. And so again, using that technology to demonstrate why they need to take action. I think we need to make sure as a sector, as a charity sector, we're all trying to influence government through putting policy into practice, then using that to influence future policy, showing the art of the possible. We need to prioritize and invest in technology because I truly believe that's the foundation of making good decisions in this space, but it needs to be affordable. And we need to use it to show staff, to show members, to show volunteers the impact of their actions so that, again, you get more people taking action because they're part of something bigger. Like we've already talked about, many of us are membership organizations or we have thousands of supporters. And we are trusted by society and for good reason. So we can help galvanize support from the wider public. We can empower individuals to make a difference at home, at work, politically, connecting people with nature close to home, showing them what we're doing. And then together we can make a big difference. So we can show to the public, to our members, our supporters, to businesses, to governments, as the charity sector, that if we don't fix the climate and nature crisis, we cannot fix the economy. We can never have a healthy and sustainable food system. We can never have a healthy, sustainable society or community or us as individuals. So our future and those of future generations completely depend on us taking action and influencing others to take action, both in what we deliver as part of our charitable objectives, but also just as importantly, is what we do in our business operations.
Again, inspiring stuff. You guys are great at it. Thank you. And Lauren, how do you think the charity sector can improve?
Yeah, for me, at an operational level, it's about networking and coming together, like Rachel and Emma have just said, about having those connections and not being isolated. There's so many different charity groups, and sometimes it's you can double up on the efforts that are being made, but as long as we're all coming together, that's the absolute main thing. Like, there's various charity network groups that I would advise that other charities who are looking to improve their sustainability or their environmental reporting do join, because it's so worthwhile to be able to share best practice, to share experiences, challenges, even just share your supplier list and what prices you're getting from who. It's way more useful because then you can make better procurement decisions, and you can also collaborate together to put procurement pressure on suppliers. But it's also really useful to have that insight into what struggles and challenges other charities are facing. So it might be that you run a building without gas. It's an electricity building, but it's still useful to know what challenges buildings that have these old gas boilers are suffering from, because then you can help inform your own advocacy work and add that as an area that you're working on with the government to help improve. So it's really useful to share those experiences from different groups. I was also just going to say that at WWF, we have loads of resources that we share. We're very open, honest, and transparent with everything sustainability wise. So on our website, we have a whole page of resources, so you can download all of our policies, our environmental targets, our sustainability reports, our sustainable procurement tools that we have as well. And we have a sustainable office guide, which, although it says office in the title, is actually just about the concept of an organization. It's not strictly about an office. So that can be a really useful starting point for any charities that are looking to start figuring out how they go about monitoring their footprint or what tips they could use, or even looking for more advanced tips, it's available to anyone. So that's a really useful port of call that I would promote to others if they want to start having a look and see what a WWF doing or where should I start, because it can be difficult to know where to even start.
Definitely. That was, again, something that came out of the Climate Action Report, is where to start. And we had did a climate action webinar about climate change in the sector really early in the year. And yeah, it was people just not knowing which calculators to use because everyone differs and they're all different levels of complexity, aren't they? So I think having seeing what other charities are doing is a really, really helpful way of sharing that info, you know, getting to. It's a really helpful way of starting, isn't it? And starting on that journey and the uniformity of it all. Yeah, I think that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a really fascinating conversation. I've definitely got a lot to take away from that. We hope everyone listening has enjoyed it too. You can find more climate action resources on our Climate Action Hub, which you can find on the Charity Digital website, and we've linked to it in the description below as well. Thank you for listening and see you next time. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.